Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning, everyone. Lee Cattell hosting Vermont Viewpoint today here on WDEV as Rex and Gary is not laboring on Labor Day week. He's enjoying it off. He'll be back next Monday. And we've had a series of folks trying to fill his shoes over the past couple of days. And today's my opportunity, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you and some very special guests who are going to join us during the course of the day today. Coming up, we will chat in the next half hour with Mav Kim, and she is going to be discussing yards that sing and buzz and bloom, how to make where you live part of Vermont's natural habitats. So if you want to spruce up and make your backyard a more beautiful place, Mav has some wonderful suggestions. And I know a lot of people think that this is the kind of stuff that you do in the spring. Oh, no. Fall is the best time to get some of this work done, so don't take that snow shovel out yet. You still have some work to do in the backyard, and we'll chat about that with Mav coming up at 9:30. In the 10 o'clock hour, I'm going to give you the golden opportunity to tell me where to go and what to do. I'm going on vacation for a couple of weeks, and if you've got any suggestions, and let's just narrow it down to anywhere within the continental United States. If you have a suggestion about a wonderful vacation place that you experienced, and maybe you think I might like it too, you're invited to call in the second hour to discuss that. Also, I would welcome a review, positive or negative, of where you went over the course of your vacation this past summer, or we can even go further back than that with a fond vacation memory of yours in somewhere that you would like to share with us here on WDEV. I'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are open throughout the course of the show at 802-244-1777 and toll-free 877-291-8255, 244-1777. 877-291-8255. On the line with us right now is our first guest, Annette Isaacs, who is a knowledgeable student and scholar of German politics. You know, we get enough of the political scene here in the United States day in and day out, really. It seems like a 24/7, 365 sort of deal, but politics in Germany is heating up because they've got an election, and it's not an opportunity for re-election. Chancellor Angela Merkel has been in the office for 16 years, and she's not running for re-election, so we're going to have somebody new running the government there in Germany, and Annette's going to discuss that and some other issues affecting Deutschland. Annette, good morning, and welcome to the WDEV airwaves.
Good morning, Lee, and good morning, everybody who's listening.
So Angela Merkel is getting done after 16 years. If she were running for re-election, is she still popular enough to be a likely winner? How do the German people regard her work over the past 16 years?
Well, I would say that certainly depends. You know, there are a lot of Germans who were very happy with the last 16 years, certainly her voters or everybody who voted for her, because she has been the leader of the CDU, the Christian Democratic Party, the more conservative party in Germany for many years. And so there are people who are having wonderful jobs, who were able to really kind of live good lives in the last 16 years, but there are, of course, also a lot of people who weren't, you know. So, for example, I was just looking this up recently. So we now have, in the year 2021, we have about 900 food pantries. And I, of course, I'm obviously, you can hear from my accent, I am a German woman. I grew up there. I lived there for many, many years until I came here to this country. And when I grew up in Germany, we didn't have any food pantries. And I grew up poor, by the way. My parents did not have any money, but we still were participating in this wealthy country. And nowadays, you do have, you know, you have like 10 million Germans who are working full-time for less than $12 an hour. And these are all things, you know, we have this this inequality that is going on in Germany that was not the case in when I was growing up, maybe like 10 years ago or maybe 15 years ago. And so that's why I would say, we don't know. We don't know how many, I mean, she certainly would have more than 20 or 22% of the vote, which is what her successor now has, you know, the guy who wants to become our chancellor from that party, from the CDU. But we'll see. So, yeah, Merkel is a controversial figure, I would say, especially, and maybe we can talk about this a little later, maybe especially also for people from former East Germany, which is so interesting because she is from East Germany originally, right?
Well, we'll get into that, although time is going to get by on us quickly, I can tell already. 244-1777. So what's the name of the person that's going to try to replace her in this Christian Democratic Party? And what is the nature of his lack of support? And out of the bloc that does not support Merkel, what does that consist of?
Yeah. So the thing is, there are, in a way, there are three people who are vying to become the chancellor. So the first one would be this one. This would be a man by the name of Armin Laschet. And this man is right now the governor of the state of North Rhine-Westphalia, which is actually the most populous state in Germany. There are 18 million Germans who live in North Rhine-Westphalia. So he has a pretty important job, so as the governor, but he's not very liked. He is, it was very interesting. People, there was this, this German newspaper who was doing this, this big opinion poll about, so what do you like about this man, and what do you think would be a characteristic, how would you characterize him? And I think over 30% said boring. So that was quite interesting that many Germans consider him boring. Then you have from the SPD, because that's also a very interesting story, the Social Democrat. The Social Democrat is the Social Democratic Party. They have a person who would like to become the chancellor, and this is a man by the name of Olaf Scholz. And Mr. Scholz has been our finance minister for the last in the last administration, because we had a grand coalition. So that's a whole other topic that we need to get into, this idea of the coalitions. Because in Germany, as you know, we have many different political parties. We have about 40 political parties who would like to be, of course, participating in our government. But in order for this not to become too crazy, we have a 5% rule. So in order to be present in our parliament, you have to have more than 5% of the vote. And most of these parties are never going to get more than maybe 1% or 2%. So that's why we have about 6 parties that are actually having a shot, you know, when it comes to having more than 5% of the vote. And so the SPD is the party, the Social Democratic Party. I would say you could compare it to your Democratic Party, whereas you could compare the CDU, Angela Merkel's party, to your Republican Party.
Okay, so, now let me jump in here for a minute. So Laschet is described by a lot of people as boring. Scholz is a finance minister. I can't imagine he's very exciting either. So who's the entertaining, if the Germans want to be entertained as opposed to governed, who are they looking for to be the next chancellor?
Well, that's exactly it, Lee. We don't want to be entertained. That's the thing. say we want to have somebody who is competent. And that is exactly what we think of Olaf Scholz. Because in that, you know, what I just mentioned, this newspaper that was asking people about the candidates and what characteristics they would attribute to these people, most of the people there said, when it comes to Olaf Scholz, he is competent. And because of the fact that Armin Laschet, you know, Armin Laschet had quite, one could say, like a little scandal happened. And that happened last month. That happened in July when we had these horrible floods, you know, in many German areas. It was just absolutely terrible. There were these floods, and I think close to 200 people died, and that was just absolutely shocking. So there was this idea. We had a press conference going on in the area where Armin Laschet is governing, and so he was there at the press conference. And we have in Germany, we not only have a chancellor, we also have a president. And that president was he's more like a figurehead in that sense. You know, he's more responsible for like representative functions. And since Angela Merkel was not there at the time in Germany, she was in, believe it or not, America. So she actually went to America in July while this terrible flood was happening. So the president was in that press conference. And so he was talking in front of many journalists. And in the back, you had Armin Laschet, the governor, who was standing there with several other people. And all of a sudden, they start laughing. So somebody made a joke, made a weird remark. And and people were laughing in the back. And so the photographers were taking pictures of, you know, our president being absolutely distraught at all these people who died. And then in the back, you see Armin Laschet just laughing and having a grand old time. And that was such bad optics, you can imagine. I mean, we were shocked when we saw this very picture. And I think that really, you know, that's the thing with politics. One laugh can really cost you an election. And then the other thing is really this idea of we are not people, you know, we are somber, serious people. You know, we love, if our presidents or our chancellors have PhDs, if they are professors, we love that. We love competence. We love, you know, a certain amount of just like seriousness. And so this would be, you know, we have Laschet from the CDU, we have the Scholz from the SPD. But then we have an outlier. We have a third person, and that is a woman by the name of I'm drawing a blank. I can't believe it. Annalena Baerbock. Annalena Baerbock is from the Green Party. The Green Party is the environmentally friendly party, and she is the one. She's 40. She's 40 years old. She's very young for a politician, and also very young for wanting to become the chancellor. She, of course, has a leg up, one could say, when it comes to the young Germans, because the young Germans adore her. Of course, the idea of, you know, being a member of the Green Party, of course, has their core competency is climate change. And that is, of course, something, especially when it comes to these floods, you know, that we are now connecting. We are connecting the dots, and we're thinking, oh, maybe we have to do something serious against climate change. So it's a very interesting field when you think of it.
Now, Germany, of course, in World War II, defeated, split up into East Germany and West Germany about 30 years ago. The Berlin Wall came down. They were East and Western parts were reunified. Is there a political divide now? Like, does East Germany lean left and West Germany lean to the right? Or has that sort of dissipated over the course of the last 30 years?
It is so interesting that you say that, because it's the other way around, actually. It is the way that, so right now, we have more East Germans who are leaning to the right, and we have more West Germans who are leaning to the left.
Now, has it been like that since the wall came down, or is that a recent development?
I would say it's a relatively recent development, because, you know, one of the big watershed moments, one could say, in recent German history is the year 2015, you know, when we had our refugee crisis, when Angela Merkel in September, actually, this is like September 4th, I think it was, she decided that she was going to open the borders of Germany to all the refugees from Syria, from Afghanistan, from Iraq. And so you had about a million refugees who came to Germany in the year 2015. And so right now, because, you know, in the ensuing years, many of them were able to get their families to Germany. So now we have, I would say, more than 2 million people who, most of them, the overwhelming amount of them, Muslims, who are coming to Germany in the past maybe 5 or 6 years. And so that was something that many East Germans felt very uneasy about, and that also has to do with the fact that, of course, you have to understand the East Germans had been living under socialist rule for 40 years. So that meant that they also, you know, they were all poor people. They didn't really have the chance to acquire any wealth. And so they then, when we had the unification was a traumatic experience for many East Germans because of the fact that the East German economy totally collapsed. So these people have been living, you know, on social welfare, on unemployment for, many of these people, you know, have been living on that for many years. And so they, of course, they are poor people. So now they have, of course, Angela Merkel, who comes from East Germany, who says, you know, we have to do a policy of austerity. We can't just give away money left and right. So you will have to learn how to live on these very, very low unemployment payments. So people are, of course, dealing with that. And then the refugees come. And they, of course, they get apartments, they get medical care, they get food and everything. Hmm. And that, of course, really rubbed many of these East Germans the wrong way. So in the first year of the refugee crisis, the federal government spent 25 billion euros in order to house these people, you know, in order to kind of take care of the refugees. And of course, that was like shocking to the East Germans.
They have an election for chancellor coming up on September 26th. That's a Sunday, is that right? They have their elections on a Sunday, Annette?
Yes, we always have our elections on a Sunday.
Hmm. That way nobody has to, there are people that work on Sundays, but at least it takes that kind of out of play for everybody. So my question is, you were talking about the migrants coming in and that being a big issue back in 2015. Are between the Green Party, the Social Democrats, and Angela Merkel seem to be pretty welcoming to a lot of migrants. Is there a feeling anywhere in Germany about a nationalist sentiment that they are being overrun or over-influenced by the migrant population that's coming in?
Exactly, yes. This would be a big yes, a resounding yes, because the thing is that in the course, you know, of these couple of years, like 2015, 2016, there was this political party that emerged, and that is a party that is called the AfD, the Alternative for Germany. And that party is, in a way, a one-issue party, and that party is we don't like to have the refugees in our country. And so, unfortunately, this party that's really right-wing and that is, in a way, you know, reminiscent, in a way, of the Nazi party from the 1930s, this party has gained a lot of success, especially in former East Germany. And they were able in 2017, when we had our last election, because we have our elections every 4 years, like you have in your country. So in 2017, the AfD got 12% of the vote, which is really a lot. And so, you know, that is where, you know, people who were disappointed in Angela Merkel's performance as the chancellor, and especially in her decision to open up Germany, you know, to all the refugees, that many of those people found a new political home with the AfD. And so, yeah, that's where we are right now, you know.
The upcoming election, how are they going to determine who wins? Whichever candidate gets the most votes, or do they kind of gather up a coalition to determine the winner?
Yeah, they have to do a coalition because you have to have more than 50%. And because of the fragmentation of our political landscape with all of these parties, with, let's say, six different parties that we have that are going to have the chance to get more than 5% of the vote, so you're not one of them is going to get 5% of the vote. So now our polls are saying that the CDU might get 20 or 22%, the SPD might get 23 to 25%, the Greens might get 15%, so that's really quite a lot more than last time in 2017. And then, of course, we have the AfD. Nobody is going to. And so that's already, I mean, that is in a way kind of written in stone that nobody is going to enter into a coalition with the AfD, with that right-wing party. And so, yeah, so then the question is, what coalition is going to be able to be formed? And we have funny names, actually, for our coalition. There's one that is called the Jamaica Coalition. And have you ever heard of it, of the Jamaica Coalition?
Well, I know the Jamaican flag is black, green, and yellow.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yes. So we are taking this from the Jamaican flag. And so our parties are associated with color. So the CDU is associated with the color black, the green, of course, obviously with green, and then the Libertarians, which is a tiny party, that is associated with the color of yellow. So that Jamaica coalition, that would be a coalition between the CDU, the Greens, and the Libertarians.
So it sounds the outcome. They say politics makes strange bedfellows. So you might have parties that are actually opposed on great many issues gathering together to help attain some power in the government. So
you're right. You're so right about that. Exactly.
We're talking with Annette Isaacs, and any thoughts on? Israel had to have four elections before they could form a government that was able to create a coalition. Is it guaranteed that a winner will come out of this first election, or might they have to repeat the process again soon?
I don't think that we have to repeat the process, but people are already saying that they think that Angela Merkel is still going to be our chancellor at Christmas.
Oh.
because the coalition talks are going to take so very long. Because if that Jamaica coalition isn't going to work, then we are looking at a traffic light coalition. And traffic light coalition would be red, yellow, and green. That would be the SPD, the Libertarians, and the Green parties.
Sounds very intriguing. So there's a lot of political intrigue coming up, but the election is Sunday, September 26. I knew our time would go by too quickly, Annette, but I very much appreciate you enlightening us on some of what's going on in the heart of Europe. Thank you so much for giving us some time today.
Thank you. And if I could just mention that I'm going to teach a class at the University of Vermont on September 15th at 11 a.m., and that it will be a Zoom class for OSHER. So please, everybody, sign up for it. It's called Germany 2021, Understanding the Latest Developments.
All right. So that's Annette Isaacs, and we'll give you a little bit more on that coming up. But right now, we need to step into the newsroom.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. Ricks and Gary out, Lee Cattell in for today. Pat McDonald will host tomorrow, and Rick will be back on Monday. Coming up in the next hour, we've added a guest. Karen Nevin of Revitalizing Waterbury will preview the Waterbury Arts Fest as that comes to Stowe Street on Friday evening and throughout the day on Saturday. A hotly anticipated return to the Waterbury Arts Fest, which has been a traditional giant event here in the Waterbury Village for many years. Back again this year, coming up on Friday and Saturday. But joining me right now is Mav Kim, who is a backyard expert, and she's going to be hosting a discussion coming up called Yards That Sing and Buzz and Bloom, How to Make Where You Live Part of Vermont's Natural Habitats. Mav, welcome to WDEV. I bet you have a beautiful backyard.
Thank you, Lee. I think we do. It's a work in progress, and will continue to be that. It will never be done.
Well, a lot of times when you get into mid to late September and people are gathering in their vegetables and doing all the canning and jarring and pickling and things like that, people are thinking about getting their snow shovels out and preparing for winter, but this is actually the best time to do work on your garden and your backyard. Is that right?
You know, it feels like work on our garden and backyard starts in March and continues through November every single day. So, yes, there's a lot to be done in the fall, but I'm not sure it's the very best time. We're in the process of, my partner mostly is in the process of planting a lot of native shrubs and trees that will attract pollinators and birds. And a lot of them, this is the best time of year to be planting them and getting them situated and giving them a month or so before the first heavy frost. So we're doing that and dividing up strawberries for next year and still working in the vegetable gardens and trying to get the yard looking good for the program you talked about that's going to be next Thursday. Is going to be followed by a field trip here so people can visit the backyard that they will have heard about on the show and hope to encourage some people to embrace mess instead of beautifully manicured lawns.
So spring is when a lot of the planting goes in as far as the garden vegetables and herbs and things like that. But in terms of shrubs and trees, putting them in the fall is the best time for the trees to survive and thrive?
For some of them. Yeah, it differs. That's the trouble. We've had to do a lot of research. Some of them you put in right after the last frost, and some you put in later. And there's a lot of research to be done, and we've had some failures, but a lot of successes. But every single year is different. Like last year, we have a lot of nut trees, and last year they were covered with nuts. And this year they're looking sickly, and we don't have many nuts, and we really don't know what it's about. They're hazelnut bushes, and they're short and little, and we got, many, many quarts of hazelnuts last year from these three little bushes, and we'll probably get four hazelnuts this year. So gardening is really interesting. I don't know how people who have to rely on it for survival or business farmers do it, because there's just always something that might be discouraging.
Difficult to predict for sure. So
yes.
How important are birds and bees to a crop yield in a garden?
Well, good question, because pollinators are really in trouble in the whole world, not just this country. And without pollinators, we lose a gigantic amount of what we're
what we eat. Something happened in China a few years ago. Several years ago, China used to be this one section, the world's greatest pear-producing country ever. It was just wonderful. And heavy use of pesticides killed off all of the native bee populations. And now these areas have thousands and thousands and thousands of pear trees that are being pollinated by hand. Every single individual blossom, somebody climbs up with a little brush in his hand and pollinates it. And it works, sort of, but labor costs are just soaring. Fruit production is way down. And people predict that there are parts of the United States where we're heading there, where we're going to have to be hand-pollinating our food. It's estimated that one out of every three bites of food each one of us eats is here because of pollinators. And if we lose them, we're going to lose as many as, there are a lot of estimates, 12,000 crops, 100,000 different plant species. So making your yard and making our whole Vermont and the whole country actually pollinator friendly is, it's good for all of us, and it allows us to leave a world that's better for our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, where they actually might be able to eat.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm thinking about all of the businesses here in Vermont and across the country that are looking for help. There's a shortage of labor all over the place. I can only imagine how hard it would be to find people in these big gardens and fields, to find people to go out with their paintbrush and pollinate bushes. That just seems like a job that would be hard to fill. Best to leave it to the birds and bees, because they do it naturally.
Yes, and China has, that's one thing they have a surfeit of, is humans. Fairly low-cost labor. We don't have that, so we would be in really, really, really bad shape.
Now, are we talking about bees, birds, like hornets and wasps? Are those considered pollinators as well?
Yes, some wasps are tremendously important. Some bees, some flies, some beetles. The number of pollinating insects, I have been astonished. My partner, Bernie Paquette, has been studying that for a couple of years and taking photos in our backyard of insects. There are so many more than I thought, and so many more are important than I ever would have guessed. I think he's up to something like 500 different species of insects right in Jericho, many of them in our backyard. And they're doing work. They're out there, you know, every day. Some of them are pollinating only our squashes, and some of them are pollinating our pole beans, and others are doing other jobs. It's quite amazing. And I know that a lot of people don't like bugs of any sort, and they're afraid of bees and wasps. But many, many wasps actually don't sting. Many, many bees actually don't sting. And we need them. So I read somewhere that if we make our lawns more and more friendly to caterpillars, so we have many, many more caterpillars, we will have many, many more birds, and we might get more insects in the backyard of various kinds, but we will see fewer of them because we will have so many birds who are eating them. So they'll be eating some of those things that we don't like, as well as, you know, all the tiny little bitty caterpillars on the apple trees.
We're talking with Mav Kim, and she is an expert on building a backyard that's a part of Vermont's natural habitats. You're invited, if you have a question for Mav, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Mav, how about a couple of suggestions that would make a more bird-friendly yard?
Okay. Well, there are two that are, there are many, but there are two that are so incredibly important that if you do nothing else, you'll get results. The number of birds that we've seen in our backyard has almost doubled the species in the last 5 years since we started really working on making a bird and pollinator-friendly backyard. And the very best way is to plant shrubs and trees and perennials that are native to Vermont, because it's this really complicated interaction between songbirds and insects and plants. As the birds evolved, they learned, of course, what trees and flowers and other plants and bugs provide the food they need. And the insects learned what plants provided food for them. And then the plants protected themselves from bugs by evolving chemicals that taste bad. And then the bugs evolved further to tolerate the chemicals so they could keep feeding on the plants, and on for millennia. Well, a lot of property owners like plant varieties that are advertised as pest-free because it just sounds so good. You can pay for something, you can plant it, and it's not going to get chewed up by caterpillars. Because the caterpillars and the other insects that were adapted to feed on those pest-free plants have been left behind in Europe or Asia, the plant's homelands. And our native insects haven't developed immunity to those chemicals in those plants, and they don't feed on them, which sounds good for gardeners. But the vast majority of our birds need those bugs. Almost all birds eat bugs all year round, even that we think of as seed eaters. And they particularly forage for insects during breeding season because they need protein for their growing chicks. In fact, we have only one species of totally vegetarian birds in Vermont, and that's American goldfinch. All the other ones are going to chow down on bugs when they're feeding babies and when they're trying to fatten up in preparation for migration. And caterpillars are really good, and we won't get birds. The birds will be dying off faster than they already are unless they can find bug-rich diets. And that's the biggie, plant things that are native. There is, by the way, one humongous exception to that, and that is the whole apple family. It's called the Malus genus. For some reason, they're not native to the United States. Almost all of them were brought from Europe or et cetera. But they all are happily munched on by our native caterpillars, and they're happily used by native pollinators, and they're happily, the caterpillars are delight native birds. So, you know, you can feel comfortable about growing any of that gigantic family, apples, pears, peaches, apricots, if you can get them to grow, blackberries, raspberries, et cetera.
So plant local species,
yes,
and apple trees.
And things that are related to apples. Yes.
Okay, so that's one suggestion. What's the second big suggestion to make a more bird-friendly yard?
The second big suggestion is to cut down the size of your lawn. Lawns are absolutely worthless to birds. They are just plain deserts. They have almost no value to birds or any other wildlife. They use up fossil fuels, they use up water, and much, much worse, many people feel they have to use chemicals on their lawns. The National Audubon Society, I think it was, yes, estimates that a lot of suburban lawns across the country have 10 times more chemicals per acre than farmland, and that those stuff, they've been implicated in the staggering loss of pollinators. They've been implicated in human cancers. Bees and butterflies are very susceptible to the pesticides and herbicides and weed killers that people put on their lawns. So, you know, it doesn't mean we have to throw away our lawnmowers and just let everything grow wild. A lot of people who are de-lawning, there's actually a website, I think, called the De-Lawning of America. They just start by mowing big paths and leaving on the side of the paths to go to nature or planting wildflowers or planting native shrubs. And that's what we've done. I moved here in 1986 to this property. It's 1.3 acres. And about two-thirds of it was a sort of typical suburban backyard. It had a little tiny vegetable garden, two perennial beds, and the rest was lawn. And now we have almost all of it is not lawn, but we did clear places where we can sit and watch birds. There's a cleared little enclave that's very pleasing. And we've cleared some wide paths to walk and go visit the, you know, the blackberries and go visit the cherry trees and et cetera. It's amazing how fast stuff grew up in the places that we're not mowing and how so much of it we want. Not all of it, because we do have some non-native invasives that we're fighting against.
So how do we get rid of the plants that we do not want?
That is a tricky question. One, there's a difference between plants we just don't feel like having and plants that are non-native and invasive. One definition of weeds is just what somebody doesn't want there right now. a lot of things we call weeds are beautiful and helpful and lovely, like goldenrod, for instance.
That was the first one that came to my mind, too, goldenrod. Yeah, it's everywhere in September, but a lot of people don't like it. And I actually there's a debate going on about whether or not it's actually an allergen and that it, whether it's ragweed or goldenrod that makes everybody so sniffly in the September.
When I was a kid, I always understood it was goldenrod.
Yeah.
But I've read since that it really isn't, that ragweed is around at the same time, and that's what more people are allergic to. I don't know. We're allowing big swaths of goldenrod in our property, and it's just beautiful. And so many different small bees and different kind of flies and little tiny wasps and everything are busy at it all the time. So it's serving a very good purpose. And then when everything dries a bit, it creates seeds that feed a lot of the birds that overwinter here, all the little sparrows and things like that. So that's a plant that some people might call a weed, but it's not an alien invasive plant. We've all heard of plants that have been brought in from other countries and have taken over. And we've all heard of milfoil and water chestnut and in the lakes and purple loosestrife.
Kudzu?
You know, I haven't heard of kudzu in Vermont. That's a scary thought.
Oh, no, they brought it in from Japan and planted it in the southeast as an attempt to control soil erosion, and now it grows all over the place up there. They can't get rid of it.
I've seen it in Florida. Thank goodness not up here. That'll cover a house, I think. But we do have a lot of Japanese knotweed, which was also brought in as a decorative plant, The problem with those is some of them are quite attractive, those non-native plants, but they don't have to cope with any insects eating them because our insects aren't adapted to eat them. So they can really easily crowd out the native plants, and so they replace plants that provide really important services for wildlife with plants that provide fewer services or none at all. Japanese knotweed is a great example. A couple of years ago, I visited Monhegan Island off the coast of Maine. It's just a lovely scenic island. And many decades ago, a resident added knotweed to his or her garden because it looked good. And it took over the whole middle section of that garden, of that island. And they couldn't use herbicide because that was right over the island's only drinking water supply. So they improvised. They started, if you had a rug or a mattress or anything like that that had to be thrown out, instead of sending it on a boat to a landfill back in mainland Maine, they just laid it over the knotweed. And it looked pretty awful. I mean, there's this huge area of many acres of old and mildewing discarded stuff. But it kept the knotweed under control, and then the locals organized this really consistent program of manually removing every single plant.
Ooh.
And now the whole center of the garden, of the island, rather, is full of these beautiful vegetable gardens instead of the knotweed. And there's actually a Jericho resident that tried a flamethrower to get rid of knotweed. I think it might have been successful, but we're not at that yet.
You know, that's funny. There are countless examples of a man getting an idea that,
yes,
hey, you know, maybe this might work over here. Like, that's how we killed the American chestnut tree, was by bringing in the Asian chestnut tree to kind of cross-pollinate and create a hybrid. Well, they brought in the Asian chestnut. It had a fungus in it, and it basically devastated the great tree of America in the 19th century.
That is a great example, because that was a noble and beautiful tree, and it all of them, millions, basically disappeared within 10 years. That's a really good example. We don't have knotweed or any of those famous ones on our property, but we have goutweed. I don't know if you know what goutweed looks like. Some people call it bishop's weed or snow on the mountain. It's a ground cover, and I actually brought it here purposely, perfect example of foolishness, and we have been spending years weeding and weeding and weeding and digging it out, and we cover it with black plastic and cardboard and layers of newspaper and even metal roofing, and it's this wonderfully hardy plant. it tolerates any kind of soil. It tolerates full sun or partial sun or full shade. It multiplies incredibly quickly. It kills off anything else that's there. It supplies nothing to the wildlife except for one woodchuck we have who absolutely loves chewing on goutweed, so we like him. But
Most people think of a woodchuck as a varmint, but it's actually doing your work for you there.
It is. He just waddles up. He's humongous to a goutweed patch, and he picks one leaf, and he stands up on his hind legs, and he closes his eyes, looks like ecstasy, as he munches on the goutweed.
Oh, that's good stuff, he says.
He does. We love it.
Well, we're talking with Mav Kim, and she has a discussion coming up on how to make where you live part of Vermont's natural habitats. Mav, can you give us a couple more minutes on the other side of the news break?
Yes, I can. Yep.
All right, we're going to be back with more from Mav. You are invited to join us if you've got some questions about how to make your backyard a better part of Vermont's natural habitat at 244-1777 and toll-free 877-291-8255. Also coming up in the next hour, vacation hints for me as I take a 3-week break here from the Radio Vermont studios, and we'll do that as well. Also, we'll get a preview of the Waterbury Arts Fest coming to Stowe Street starting tomorrow. It's all part of Vermont Viewpoint today here on WDEV FM and AM, World and National News in a moment.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to check in with Karen Nevin. The Waterbury Arts Fest is back and coming to Stowe Street on Friday and Saturday. We'll get the rundown there. But I got a couple more minutes here with Mav Kim. She's got an upcoming class with Osher Lifelong Learning called Yards That Sing, Buzz, and Bloom. How to make where you live part of Vermont's natural habitats. And I have a special guest host joining us here on Vermont Viewpoint this morning. Kaya, what do you got going on in your backyard?
Bee boxes. I'm wondering, are they worth it? Earlier this summer, spring, I was at my local Agway store, saw bee boxes. They're cute, they're pretty, they're colorful, great addition, but are they really worth it?
So, bee boxes. First, most people think of honeybees when they think of bees, but they're actually not our native bees. A lot of our native bees are solitary, and they like crawling into those little tubes in bee boxes, and that's you know, their quote-unquote home, and that's where they spend their time. I don't know any statistics for whether bee boxes increase the number of bees that you have in your yard or not. I can't think that they do any harm, however.
Right.
We've got a couple around. Did you buy one?
I bought three of them because they were cute. They looked good in the yard.
Yes.
But then after I got reading about them online, it was like, maybe this was not the right decision. It seemed like there was a lot of work after the season.
Yes. You got to clean them out, exactly, which is true of bird boxes also, you know, nesting boxes. So, yes, and they get clogged up and they collapse. And, yeah, you don't want to just put it up and leave it up for the next, you know, 5 years.
Okay, because I do notice that the little tubes have become, well, probably 50% of the little bamboo tubes are filled with mud. So
that's good.
I'm wondering, are the bees in there? And then what's the proper way to clean them out?
Oh, I am sorry. Lee has referred to me a couple of times as an expert on the backyards and pollinators. I'm really not.
You're a student.
I'm a birder, right.
And oh, okay.
I'm an expert on birds, I would say. And this is an offshoot from my birding.
Right.
But I've learned so much. Yes, I'm a student. That's a good way to put it. I've learned a lot, and that's something I haven't learned yet. If you contact Vermont Center for Eco Studies, VCE, they have true experts on every possible subject.
Okay.
And they probably could answer the question of whether you're supposed to, you know, assume that there are bees in there that you don't want to disturb or not.
Right. Okay. That's Vermont Eco Center?
Vermont Center for Eco Studies,
okay.
VCE. It's headquartered in Norwich.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, now you talked about mowing lawns earlier, and I've got a modest backyard, but it's surrounded by forest, so
lucky.
There's a lot of shade on the grass that grows there, and I find that every year I get less grass and more moss growing up. But I get some robins that bounce around on the grass and go and hunt for bugs. I'm just wondering. I got a couple questions about the birds. Number one, are there some birds that might like a little bit of lawn like that? And number two, are birds receptive enough to realize that the lawn that they're walking around and picking bugs off of is toxic, and do they move and relocate to a spot where it's a more clean environment?
In answer to the second one, no, unfortunately. Just like we're not aware when we walk across a lawn or a farm field that's been heavily hit with herbicides. Unfortunately, no. But in answer to the first question, yes, there are some birds that will find some things in lawns, particularly if there's some moisture, like you've got seeps here and there. Robins will find critters in your lawn sometimes. Flickers are a bird that loves ants. They're a member of the woodpecker family, but they don't peck on trees very often. You'll see them walking around the yard, digging around, and they're looking for anthills, and so you might see them on the yard, on the lawn. Every now and then, some rare bird shows up on a lawn, mostly where there's a seep, where there's moisture coming up through, or in the wintertime where somebody's dryer vent has kept the snow away right there, and there's moisture,
mm-hmm.
Because interesting little bugs are in there, and nourishing bugs. So you're very lucky, by the way, to have moss, because you don't need to mow that. That's wonderful. And that will help, you know, nourish the soil underneath it. It will keep everything firm underneath it, so you're not going to be constantly moving things around and destroying what's going on, all the interesting chemical reactions going on in there.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was about to go throw some grass seed over before too long, so that's a no-no. Don't do
it's
that.
It's beautiful. We'd love to have some more moss. Hmm. And clover, we keep, like, where I lived before in Essex Junction, the whole backyard was clover. I don't think anybody ever planted it. It's just what came up. And it was just lovely because I was mowing it much less frequently than most grasses are mowed. And it was good, very good for the soil. So you must see a lot of birds if you're surrounded by forest.
All right, here's another one. No, I put up one of those bright red hummingbird feeders and fill it with water that's got sugar in it. Am I doing hummingbirds a favor by putting that out, or is it something that they'd be better off not consuming?
If it's true, just white sugar, four water to one sugar boiled and then put out, that is almost an exact approximation of a lot of what they're going to be eating in flowers. And it doesn't do them any harm. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology has been studying the question, should we feed birds, all birds? You know, are we doing them harm? Is it good for them? Are we delaying their migration by feeding them? And their final answer after 15 years or something is, we're not doing them any harm, but we're doing ourselves more pluses than we're doing the birds, probably. The birds will hang out in places where there's a lot of natural food, and what we're giving them is just a supplement. The only time it really helps is if there's a bad storm in the middle of the winter. And it has been found that feeding birds actually keep some alive. It keeps owls alive sometimes if this snow is really deep and they can't get their prey. They'll come to bird feeders and they'll hang out at night and catch the rodents that come out to eat dropped seed.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, and in the spring sometimes, if it's a late, cold, awful spring, a lot of birds come back and there's nothing for them to eat yet. And putting out a little bit of, for instance, hummingbird nectar might keep some birds alive that otherwise wouldn't make it that year. So, no, you're not hurting the birds unless you're using red dye or trying to use honey in the water or something that's not good for hummingbirds.
Oh, okay.
And you're helping yourself, and they really feel that if you have kids and the kids see the birds, you're doing a very good thing.
Well, I don't think it delayed their migration any. I think my hummingbirds and robins have already left town.
Have left. We thought our hummingbirds had left, but we saw one this morning. Robins, by the way, won't leave. They'll be around all winter. They may just not be around in your backyard.
Well, yeah, I know. I had a couple nesting in my woodshed, and right. I think a critter might have got up there and disrupted whatever they were doing. So, I don't know. As we like to say in the radio business on that one, we'll stay tuned.
Yes, exactly.
I'm talking with Mav Kim, and you have a couple of classes coming up through the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute.
Yes, that's at UVM. Actually, it's all over the country. Mm-hmm. OSHA's OLLI is all over the country at universities. But this is at UVM, and I've got a Zoom class coming up next Thursday. You can go to OLLY-UVM for all of the classes. There's so many excellent classes. About this, how to make your yards a part of the natural habitat. And then the following Saturday, there's going to be a follow-up field trip here to our house. And this will be an in-person trip. It'll be the first in-person things that since COVID started. Because it's going to be outdoors. People will be 6 feet apart. And I may even ask people to use masks. But anyway, they can see the backyard. We can wander around. We'll share some juices from some of our fruits and sort of get to see what they saw about in the program.
And you offer up a bit of information on a blog. Where can people go online to find that?
Yes, they can go to two different blogs. One is run by myself and my partner, and it's called vtbirdsandwords.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And that has a lot of stuff about birds. As I said, I'm primarily a bird watcher. And the other has a great deal of information about pollinator-friendly backyards. And I think I gave you an address, but I can't.
I think it's jerichovermont.blogspot.com.
Yes, thank you very much. Good.
Right. VT, good. VT Words and Birds?
VT. So Vermont,
yep.
Vermont, yeah, birdsandwords.blogspot.com.
All right.
I think I'm right. Wait, am I right about that? You know, I never look up my own thing.
And yes, you can find the information for that, vtbirdsandwords.com, yep. .blogspot.com, and then you can get a hold of Maeve, and she's got her schedule of all of her upcoming events listed there.
Yes, exactly, under classes.
Mav, I'm thankful for you sharing some of your time and knowledge with us here on Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV this morning. Much appreciated, and happy birding to you.
Thank you so much, and enjoy what's left of the beautiful weather before winter.
Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk vacations. I'd like a review of your vacation, wherever you went over the course of this summer, and I'm going to take off for a couple of weeks here. I've got some pent-up vacation time. I was deemed essential, so I had to come in every day for the last 485 days. So I'm going to pack up all my, as the song goes, I'm going to fire up all the guns and explode into space for 3 weeks. And so you can tell me where to go and what to do if you call us here in a couple minutes at 244-1777. I would love to hear your suggestions. Now, unfortunately, I will not be in town for the Waterbury Arts Fest, which is going on tomorrow and Saturday right here on Stowe Street. You're in the Radio Vermont studio. You go down the stairs, you walk out the door, and it's going on all around you. It's a big event, and after missing last year as part of the COVID response, it is back in the Crossroads community. And Karen Nevin of Revitalizing Waterbury is joining us to say, welcome back to the Arts Fest.
Yes, I'm so excited. First of all, Lee, you're missing out, and you know it, for not being here this weekend. But if anyone's in town, they got to come on down. We're really excited. We were originally going to bring it back slowly and quietly and carefully. And as the summer went on, we said, nothing slow and quiet. We're bringing the full event back, Friday Night Block Party. That's the event you guys know to come down and dance in the streets, drink good beer, have fun with your friends and family, have fun, good food. The weather's looking perfect.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday is the Arts Fest with all the artists. And again, we had planned for a small contingent, and we are full. Every single booth is full. We've got all sorts of wonderful new artists who are going to be here. We've got kids' activities. And I always predict, or rather plan, for 72 degrees and partly sunny. And if you check your forecast, that's what we're planning for.
Well, that is just awesome. Now, let me do a little bit of technical adjustment here, because I think this might actually be...
Ah, you need this mic better?
Yeah, how about that?
Can you hear me, everybody?
Yeah, my producer fixed things over there. Danny is running the show and said, someone, right, there we go. So, Friday evening... music. Let's start with the music to dance to. Who's
okay.
First?
So Jane Evans Band is starting the show. She is a good dancing music, get us started up off our feet kind of band. We're really looking forward to hanging out with her. And then Brett Hughes and his Honky Tonk Band is coming out at I think it's 7:30 to finish up the evening. Again, just good moving and grooving music to get you out there up on your feet and having fun.
That's always a big turnout there. Now, it moves into the evening, past dark, going to be well lit through
there. Oh, so we figured this out. Usually we're in July, sun sets at 8:30. Now we're in September, sun sets at 7. We have a plan for lighting, including the beautiful new historic lampposts that are on Stowe Street. So we're going to enjoy the beautiful new street, and we've got lighting planned. You're not going to be in the dark, and you're going to be having a lot of fun. So, yes, you'll be able to see. You'll be able to dance. You'll be able to have fun.
That's always a big turnout, and people flock to the street dance on Friday night. So we've got a couple of different bands. Goes up until about 9:30. My colleague Brady Farkas usually likes to park on Stowe Street, but he was wondering at what time are the tents going to be coming in, and will they be closing it down to start preparations?
Thanks for asking, Lee. Parking is one of our biggest issues and things we take real care about. The street tomorrow on Friday, is closing by 10 a.m. Which is when the Vermont Tent Company shows up and starts putting up our tents in the stage. So Stowe Street needs to be clear of all cars by 10 a.m. Honestly, I'll move you earlier if I can. And then Bidwell Lane is shut down at 5 a.m. on Saturday morning. So I hate to do it, but if any cars are on Bidwell Lane when I arrive at 6, I will tow them. I don't tow them very far. I truly just tow them 100 yards away because I don't want you to have to really scramble to find your car. But I'd even better not. I'd rather not call the tow truck. So just don't put your car at the bottom of Bidwell Lane on Saturday morning.
Oh, okay. When you said you were going to tow them, I thought you were actually putting them on the hook yourself.
No.
Oh, okay.
So there's one little twitch this year. The Stowe Street is going to be staying closed until 8:30 Sunday morning. We have had issues with the Vermont Tent Company, and they're not going to be able to come and pick up the tents until Sunday morning. Crack of dawn, they plan on being here. Part of it is we're respecting the American Legion's request to have the Stowe Street available for a 9/11 remembrance on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So we're keeping Stowe Street closed through Sunday morning at 8:30. Bidwell Lane will be open. All the businesses will be open. You'll be able to get to them, but the street will be closed.
Okay. Back to music for a moment,
yeah.
Because there are more performers on Saturday.
Yes, there are. So some of our longtime favorites, Cooey Sings is going to be there. The Green Mountain Performing Arts Scottish Highland Dancers are coming out. They're going to start the morning at 10:20. And we've got a brother-sister duo, Fiona and Emmett, who will be playing. And we're going to end the afternoon with Solstice. They are a reggae band. They're going to go a little acoustic and a little lighter than their full-blown rocking out shows. But we really wanted to take the tempo up at the end of the day so we can all have a lot of fun.
So it's not just the block party and the street dance on Friday night. It's throughout the day on Saturday as well. And, of course, people, it's kind of like the sort of event where you can spend all day at. So people are going to want to get fed.
Yes, and there is food. Of course there is. Mediterranean Mix, we love them. They'll be on Friday. Yum, they make great grilled cheese sandwiches and other wonderful things. They'll be there Friday and Saturday. We also have Lauren's Cheesecake. The Ben and Jerry's truck will be there. Brave Coffee is serving coffee with Stowe Street Cafe out on the front, out on the street. So there'll be lots of good food. And, of course, I always encourage people, check out the restaurants in town as well. There's lots of wonderful places to go and to dine and enjoy yourself in town. So there's lots of good options. And I do want to point out, as you said, Saturday you can come and do all sorts of things. We have some activities on Saturday. There's a kids' tent, so there's great kids' art activities at the kids' tent. We're making crowns. Also a paper quilt for people of all ages to decorate. Makersphere is going to be doing some things. So we've got arts activities and lots going on.
And my stomach must be growling because my mind went back to food. Casey's Bagel Shop going to be open throughout
Casey's
the day?
Casey's always open. Okay. We love Casey's.
Yeah, well, that's awesome.
We keep the aisle open so you can get to Casey's.
And some folks that go to the Waterbury Arts Fest on Friday and Saturday may win a prize.
Yes. Okay, so Friday night. Everything is free. You are welcome to come. We do not restrict this event for tickets or anything like that. But on Friday, if you make a donation to Revitalizing Waterbury, and I would like your folks out there to know, this is Revitalizing Waterbury's largest fundraiser of the year. It funds a significant portion of our budget. It is a one-time thing. We don't stick our hands out more than once a year. But if you make a donation to RW, you get a raffle ticket and an opportunity to win one of two fabulous gift baskets that we have put together for Friday night, which have swag and gift cards and artist items and T-shirts and cups and glasses. And it's just, they're cool. At least valued at least $100 each. So if you give us a donation at the door, you get a raffle ticket. That raffle ticket will give you a chance to win. Saturday, we have a silent auction. All of the artists who participate in the Arts Fest donate an item to Revitalizing Waterbury. Mm. And we put many of those items up for auction. So you can go, and again, this is part of the fundraiser for RW, bid on items, and we'll call you at the end of the day and see if you won.
I got about 2 minutes, so how about highlighting some of the artists that will be at the Arts Fest this weekend?
Oh, well, they'll be your favorites. I think that if you come, you'll see your jewelry makers that you love, like Reagan Huff, a potter who I have never had here before, but I love Su Chi Pottery is going to be there. Her stuff is beautiful. We've got fine artists. Ken Russick and his paintings will be there. Pottery, glass blowing, jewelry making, textiles, fabrics. Really, it's a wide, wide range. And in July, we can't tell you to go Christmas shopping or holiday shopping. But this time of year, we can. It's time to start your holiday shopping. And, of course, if you really want to, buy yourself a gift because you deserve it.
Complete list of the artists that are available is online at?
WaterburyArtsFest.com.
And is there a phone number or are we working online only?
It's online only if you really need 6793-6029.
All right. Karen Nevin of Revitalizing Waterbury. What's the next big event after this for Revitalizing Waterbury?
Truly, the holidays are coming, and Wrap It Up and Win, and your favorite shopping and opportunity to win raffle prizes for the month of December. We'll have that going, encouraging you to shop local.
All right. The Waterbury Arts Fest starts Friday, continues into Saturday right here on Stowe Street and the neighboring Bidwell Lane. Going to be a great weekend with all sorts of creative people, and they want you to come too. Karen, very much appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lee. I can't wait to see everyone.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV, a trip to the newsroom, and then when we return, you can tell me what I can do on my vacation.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV FM and AM. I'm inviting the audience to do a little bit of storytelling here for the final 25 minutes as we have open phones, and we're going to talk a little bit about vacations because I'm going on one here before too long. About 3 weeks away, I'll be taking some time away. I've been storing it up for a while. I haven't been able to get away from the studio, so going to be going out of town for a couple of weeks. And I am open to suggestions about your favorite vacation destination. If you went somewhere on a trip and really enjoyed it and thought it might be an appropriate place for me to check out, I'll reduce it to anywhere in the continental 48 United States to chime in on. So I'd love to hear a fond favorite vacation memory of yours and places that you found particularly captivating. I've got 802-244-1777 and toll free at 877-291-8255. I typically take driving vacations because I like being out on the open road and, you know, stopping at places along the way. You find a couple of these roads where, I mean, you know, there are the favorite spots, like south of the border between North Carolina and South Carolina, that big shopping extravaganza that's right there on the state line. I know it's a tourist trap, but, you know, that's why we have tourists, to get trapped in all of these locations. So you're encouraged, 244-1777, about a favorite destination or place you visited that you enjoyed, including this past summer. I know last year there was a lot of pent-up demand, as basically nobody was permitted to go anywhere without, protocols and quarantines and all of this and that. So a lot of people just stayed home last summer, and I think a lot of people actually ventured out this time around. So how did your vacation go? And give us a call on that. I've had a number of interesting experiences along the way, including, I guess, a couple of near misses out on the roads. One time as I was heading out to Florida, and I took a route that went out toward the west so I could visit an aunt that lived in the Nashville area. And I was driving through Cincinnati into Covington, Kentucky. I just crossed the Ohio River into Covington, Kentucky, in that area. I was following a semi-truck, and this trailer had, I don't know what you would call it. It was a big piece of about 2 feet long of solid iron. And I don't know what it was or what it was used for. It could have been something to hold the doors of the trailer open. And maybe there's a trucker out there that might enlighten me on what that was. But it was just a piece of angle iron, but it was very heavy. And I was following along with this semi, and it fell off of the back landing of the trailer, bounced off the road, and then hit my left front tire. And it hit the sidewall of the tire and blew it immediately. So this big piece of iron hit the road, then bounced off my tire and blew my tire at 75 miles an hour. And I don't know if it was just an instinctive response, but I looked up and there was an off-ramp right there. So this is four lanes of traffic going down I-71, I think it was. And when my left tire went, I immediately swerved to the right, crossing three lanes of traffic immediately to get up this off-ramp. And there was a gas station right up there. So about the time my car came to a complete dead stop, I'd come to the stop at the gas station. And it was a Sunday afternoon, so I wasn't sure who was open. And this is the one time in my life I'm going to say something nice about Walmart. I want to thank Walmart because their auto shop was open at about 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. So the guy with the tow truck took my vehicle to Walmart. They had the tire size right there and was able to get back out on the road in about an hour and 20 minutes, which was, in terms of having a car accident or something untoward happen on the highway, that was about the nicest car accident I was ever involved in. And thankfully was able to swerve across three lanes of traffic on a busy highway without having anything else bad happen along the way. But, you know, those sorts of wild rides can happen when you're out on your traveling adventure. And I'd love to hear yours at 802-244-1777 and toll free at 877-291-8255. Now, tomorrow night, we've got, it's WDEV night at Thunder Road, but I unfortunately am not going to be there. I love to be there. My favorite thing is to go down along the front stretch with all my Radio Vermont colleagues and introduce them one by one to all the folks so you can see in real life why we're on the radio and not television. But I won't be able to do that because my traveling companion insisted that we get out of town on the scheduled date. So tomorrow night I'm going to be in Wells, Maine. Now, Kaya did not give Wells a very positive review during the 8:30 coffee clatch here on the morning news service. She called it a kind of boring town, and it is kind of dull. I mean, there's a beach, and there's some seafood restaurants and a couple of shops. You know, it's kind of like Stowe by the Shore in a lot of respects. It's a nice tourist town with a couple of things that are suitable for the season, and, you know, it's quiet and festive. Although not quiet during the summertime. Wells is packed during the summertime, and I know a lot of people just, they just hate going up and down Route 1 and that whole stretch between Ogunquit and Maine and Kennebunkport. If you go any time between Memorial Day and Labor Day, you're basically just going to sit in traffic and crawl along about 100 feet at a time, waiting for, I don't know, poking along until you finally get where you got to get to go. So my favorite thing to do is to come into Wells on Labor Day afternoon, and you're the only people going into Wells, and there are just miles and miles and miles of cars lined up heading out of town, stacked up along the bridge on I-95 trying to get out of there. And then you arrive in town after all of the people have left town, and, you know, the wait staff and everybody else in the restaurants, they're all just so relaxed, because the atmosphere has just kind of descended and things have quieted down a little bit, and hotel room rates go down a little bit. The weather's not quite as nice usually. It gets darker a little earlier, but I don't know, something about arriving after Labor Day that kind of makes me enjoy it all that much more. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. I'm starting in Wells, Maine, so I can put my toes in the Atlantic Ocean. And before this trip is over, I think I'm going to be able to put my toes in the Pacific Ocean. So we're going to be doing some traveling. I'll tell you all about it when I get back. But I'm going basically far away and returning. And so if you've got a suggestion about a wonderful place to go along the way, I'm happy to hear from you. Here on the stations of Radio Vermont, WDEV, FM, and AM. We're going to take a break, then take your phone calls here on Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV, FM, and AM. Oh, one thing I didn't get to mention, or actually Karen Nevin from Revitalizing Waterbury wanted to mention, because she said if we don't mention it, somebody's going to remind me that we didn't. So there will be hand sanitizer stations at the Waterbury Arts Fest, and masks are encouraged, and there will be a COVID-19 vaccination opportunity for folks who want to come by. So there's that. WaterburyArtsFest.com for more information. Kaya joined me here as we're talking about some vacation favorites, and she brought up Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. Yeah. I went is my microphone up?
I think it's the other. Is it the other microphone? Or wait a minute. Hang on. Try that.
Oh,
can
okay.
Yeah, that better? Okay.
Is that better? Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, that's the middle microphone I'm on. Sorry about that. I went to Washington, D.C. about 3 years ago. We stopped in, is it Alexandria, Virginia, for the Air and Space Museum?
Just south of the river.
That was a good time. And I was surprised I enjoyed it. I didn't think I would.
The Space Museum?
The Space Museum. That was really nice. Also enjoyed Arlington Cemetery. If it's possible to enjoy a cemetery.
Yeah.
As I said to someone, if you don't walk away with tears in your eyes, you are colder and more heartless than I am.
The Space Museum. Danny, our producer here, suggested that I go to space while I'm on vacation, but I don't have the $38 million it takes to get there.
Good idea, Danny.
It takes a lot of money to get into space. And, you know, is it really space up there? I know it was the upper atmosphere, but do we really qualify them as getting into space? It's not like they departed from the Earth's gravity.
Mm-hmm.
When they turned the power off on that thing, it came back to Earth. So, and still, $38 bucks for all that.
Right, right.
I went to Washington, D.C. in 2000, I think it was 2003, some friends of mine and I, we were, of course, big Red Sox fans.
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday night, we went to Baltimore to see the Red Sox take on the Orioles. Then Saturday, we went into Washington, D.C., and it was the day of I think there was an anti-war protest going on there. It was right after we had jumped into Afghanistan and then Iraq, and there was a big anti-war protest. So we had to walk through the parade about three different times. I guess it's not a parade. A protest and a parade are two different things.
Yeah.
It was a protest. And we had to walk through it three different times. And we happened to walk in front of there was like a cadre of about a dozen topless protesters that were there. And somehow we wound up in front of them as we were making our way back to the hotel.
Okay.
And then we made it to the stadium where the Nationals play.
Oh.
And so we saw the Nationals and the Braves. That game was, oddly enough, it was over before an out was even recorded. And then the next day we went back to Baltimore to catch the final game.
Wow.
We're big baseball fans,
yeah.
You know. So
yeah.
it was baseball and protests. And we did the tour around all of the monuments. The cemetery is nice. I've heard nice things about, you know, the Korean Veteran Cemetery.
Right.
With all those soldiers and their helmets working their way through some godforsaken place. That was my favorite of all the monuments down there, but there are many in Washington, D.C. Terrific
so
place.
So are you still looking for more places to travel, more ideas?
Yeah, well, let's see what Trudy from Braintree has for us this morning. Good morning, Trudy.
Good morning. Have you ever heard of Pittsburgh, New Hampshire?
Pittsburgh, New Hampshire? That's way up north, right?
It is, as far north as you can get and still be in the state.
Okay, well, what's fascinating about Pittsburgh?
There's no tourist traps, not a lot of touristy things, but the Connecticut lakes are absolutely gorgeous, and that's where the Connecticut River begins, is in Pittsburgh.
Okay, there's three or four lakes up there, right?
There's three, four actually.
Okay.
Lake Francis, First Connecticut, Second Connecticut, and Third.
Okay. There you go. That's an idea.
And if you'd like to see a moose, then you get up early in the morning and go up, take a drive up Moose Alley towards the Canadian border, you're quite apt to see a moose.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting idea. I already live out in the middle of nowhere, so I'm not sure if that's where I might want to go.
So it sounds like
it's not for anybody that wants to be in a populated area, but it's an absolutely gorgeous area.
If you want to get away from it all, Pittsburgh, New Hampshire.
Yep, and we had a camp there for more than 20 years, and there's a Green Acres. And if you like sweets, she makes the most fantastic cinnamon buns.
You like a good cinnamon bun?
Who doesn't?
If you like.
You know what I like about Trudy's idea is that you can get away from the news and everything and just sort of, reflect on life. I like that.
There is a couple of restaurants, and that's it.
I bet,
think it's a road trip, Lee.
I bet 101.9 comes in up there in the Northeast Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I have to get up there and find out.
Yeah, it does.
All right.
And then if you want to take a road trip over through to Errol, There's a place out in the middle of nowhere. No, I don't even remember the name of it. That it's like a castle out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm. I don't think I've ever been in a castle before.
Okay.
Well, that's got some potential.
It was a hotel, big hotel. Good Lord. Name evades me.
All right.
That's what happens when you get old.
Well, Trudy, I appreciate these helpful suggestions. Thank you for being a part of our show here on WDEV this morning.
I'm here every morning.
All right. That's Trudy from Braintree giving us an idea there.
Now, if you want to be surrounded by ocean but still get away, as Trudy is suggesting, what about Cuttyhunk, Massachusetts?
Never heard of it.
Little island. It's got one road that goes up the hill and then a road that circles the island.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was last there, which was many, many years ago, they had the old crank phone.
You don't see those every
day. No, you don't see those anymore.
You don't even see a phone with a rotary dial anymore.
I think winter population is about 150.
Yeah.
And I believe they did an article on it on, I think it was Sunday morning a year or two ago, and they closed their one-room schoolhouse because there was one child going to school.
I get the whole school to myself.
You get the whole school to yourself. See, now, to me, that's an ideal vacation. You are in the middle of nowhere, as Trudy says, upstate New Hampshire or maybe on an island. You're by yourself. You've got time to read, knit, reflect, and just sort of chill out and get away from everything.
I'm still hooked on the idea of having my own school, letting the inmate run the asylum. I'm all right with that. And as far as running into a moose, well, not literally. I don't want to run into a moose literally, but it's been Wild Kingdom in my backyard all summer.
Mm-hmm.
Had three baby bear cubs about 2 months ago, and then last week I had the big mama bear came through there, and spent about 5 minutes browsing my raspberry bushes and not raising too much havoc, but was a very sizable critter for sure.
Now, back to your travels, one of the things I decided 4 years ago, I went to Ohio. I flew into Cleveland. Yeah, what are you going to Cleveland, mm-hmm. Ohio for? And I went down to Manaway, Ohio. I'm thinking now, because one of the things on my bucket list is sort of to travel, I want to take a dart, throw it at the map, and wherever it lands, that's where I'm going to go.
Random road trip.
Yep,
that sounds
random
fun.
Random road trip.
True adventure.
And for someplace, Minnesota intrigues me.
I'm going to check off a couple of states I haven't been to over the course of this trip.
We look forward to it.
You went to Cleveland and didn't go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No.
Me neither.
I was on a genealogy quest, so I visited a lot of back roads of where the Winchell family came from and a lot of cemeteries.
When I went to Cleveland, it was another Red Sox trip, but we did go to the...
you and I would not make good traveling companions.
We went to Cedar Point, the big amusement park, water park thing over there about an hour away. All right, and stayed at the hotel where the Red Sox were staying. We got on the elevator right when Kevin Millar and Doug Mirabelli were stepping off, and it was like we'd met Elvis and Frank Sinatra all at the same time. Bobby from Randolph, good morning. You're on WDEV. Hello, sir.
This is a female, but that's all right. I can call a lot of stuff. I thought of a Crazy Horse's Monument.
Where is it?
Michael?
South Montana. Okay.
Is it Montana. Somewhere in Montana.
I'm running a little south of Montana.
Okay.
That's one of the states I haven't been to yet.
Crazy Horse Monument. We'll have to look that up.
Well, what is it?
Is
it a statue?
It's a big statue of Crazy Horse on a horse, and it's we have a friend of ours that goes out there every year. She says it's really good, but we haven't been out there because we don't travel. So
all right, well,
that's a suggestion for something different. It's a big stone monument on a mountain.
Okay. Well, thanks for the suggestion. I do appreciate it out there in Randolph. And thank you for being a part of our vacation suggestion program here on Vermont Viewpoint today.
When you get back, can we take the best of Lee's vacation trip and then take it on the road for the next time you go? I'm sure Danny wouldn't mind traveling, your engineer. I'd go for you. I could drive the big van.
I'm using up all my vacation time in one swoop, so I won't be able to get out of this studio again for about a year, but that's the way it goes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, thanks for coming up and chatting it up with me there, Kaya. And thanks to you for calling. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to Mav Kim for telling us what to do with our bee boxes in the backyard as we create Vermont's natural habitats.
Oh, thank you. And I heard from Brian Pfeiffer about bee boxes. So I'm going to let you know next spring what happens with my bee boxes. Thank you.
And Annette Isaacs, who gave us a review of the big German election for chancellor that's coming up later this month. Have a wonderful day. It's Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre coming up next right here on these wonderful radio stations.